And joining us now, NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. Ron, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Alex.
We're going to listen to what President Bush had to say from the Capitol today in this second inaugural address. First, though, you've seen many of these inaugural addresses. I wonder if you can give us an overall impression of what Mr. Bush said. Any surprises?
Well, it carried forward the spirit of his first term, particularly with reference to the response to 9/11 and the foreign policy that's been pursued against the war on terror, although the war on terror was never mentioned in the speech, and almost all the realities of that first 4 years were referred to in highly poetic terms.
Poetic. Well, he did talk a lot about America's role overseas, Ron. He began with that theme. Here's an excerpt from early in the speech.
We have seen our vulnerability, and we have seen its deepest source. For as long as whole regions of the world simmer in resentment and tyranny, prone to ideologies that feed hatred and excuse murder, violence will gather and multiply in destructive power and cross the most defended borders and raise a mortal threat. There is only one force of history that can break the reign of hatred and resentment and expose the pretensions of tyrants and reward the hopes of the decent and tolerant, and that is the force of human freedom. We are led by events and common sense to one conclusion. The survival of liberty in our land increasingly depends on the success of liberty in other lands. The best hope for peace in our world is the expansion of freedom in all the world.
Ron, those last comments were something the White House had sent out earlier today, highlights that they wanted us in the press to underline in this speech. It sounds an awful lot like nation building, though, doesn't it?
It does. It sounds like going out into the world and making an awful lot of miniature United States governments in other countries. Now, the president explicitly said that freedom does not require that other countries adopt exactly our form of government. But he does make clear that democracy, as we define it, is the expression of freedom that we're looking for. Now, you mentioned earlier that I'd heard some of the previous inaugural speeches. I don't go far enough back to have heard Woodrow Wilson give his, but some of the rhetoric here is reminiscent of Woodrow Wilson justifying World War I, talking about making the world safe for democracy. I think this is really quite close to that, and also close to the four freedoms rhetoric that Franklin Delano Roosevelt used in talking about why we fought in World War II. We are again very aggressively moving out into the world to defend freedom, to expand the frontiers of freedom. Those are George W. Bush's words, so as to make ourselves more secure in our own democracy at home.
Here he is talking about what the American presence can mean to others.
Democratic reformers facing repression, prison, or exile can know. America sees you for who you are, the future leaders of your free country. The rulers of outlaw regimes can know that we still believe as Abraham Lincoln did. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves, and under the rule of a just God cannot long retain it. The leaders of governments with long habits of control need to know. To serve your people, you must learn to trust them. Start on this journey of progress and justice, and America will walk at your side. And all the allies of the United States can know. We honor your friendship. We rely on your counsel, and we depend on your help. Division among free nations is a primary goal of freedom's enemies. The concerted effort of free nations to promote democracy is a prelude to our enemy's defeat.
Ron, when he's talking about democratic reformers can rely on the U.S., I'm not sure if he's speaking to people in Iran or Saudi Arabia.
Or conceivably Ukraine or any number of countries where the form of government is in dispute. Saudi Arabia clearly is not a democracy, and yet they are a country we consider one of our allies, and there are other examples as well. But another part of this that I think is going to raise questions is when we get past the poetry of a term such as walk by your side, if you're a democratic reformer in some other country, what does walk by your side mean? In the case of Afghanistan, it's clear what we did there in order to bring democracy about. It was a very strong military commitment. In the case of Iraq, in order to bring about the elections that are scheduled there on January 30th, we've got a commitment of 150,000 troops. And there were a number of points in the speech where the president seemed to be saying there are going to be more countries where we're going to have to make that kind of commitment.
Later in the speech, though not much later, it's a pretty short speech, the president talks about who's going to carry out this American mission, and he's speaking to young Americans.
All Americans have witnessed this idealism, and some for the first time. I ask our youngest citizens to believe the evidence of your eyes. You have seen duty and allegiance in the determined faces of our soldiers. You have seen that life is fragile and evil is real and courage triumphs. Make the choice to serve in a cause larger than your wants, larger than yourself. And in your days, you will add not just to the wealth of our country, but to its character.
Make the choice to serve beyond your own needs and wants, Ron. I'm hearing echoes here.
Well, every president has wanted to find a line like John F. Kennedy's, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I think this was the particular attempt of this president to capture that inspirational message. Make the choice to serve in a cause larger than your wants. These are inspiring words. I suppose to some degree it could begin to be interpreted as a kind of recruiting poster as well.
The president did turn to domestic policy, not a lot about domestics in the speech, but here he is.
In America's ideal of freedom, citizens find the dignity and security of economic independence instead of laboring on the edge of subsistence. This is the broader definition of liberty that motivated the Homestead Act, the Social Security Act, and the GI Bill of Rights. And now we will extend this vision by reforming great institutions to serve the needs of our time, to give every American a stake in the promise and future of our country. We will bring the highest standards to our schools and build an ownership society.
Ron, he at least mentions Social Security there, a prominent goal of Social Security reform of the second term, we are given to understand anyway.
Absolutely. This was the prose portion of the speech in which the president did actually touch on his agenda in terms of issues, programs, things he wants to do in his second term. And you'll notice that we immediately shift in terms of language to some terms such as stake and standards in our school, ownership society, making people agents of their own destiny a little later on in the speech. The president is putting forward his agenda of the ownership society, which would place the Social Security guarantee essentially in the hands of individuals so that they would have to essentially guarantee their own long-term security, have the opportunity to do so beyond what government can do for them. This is a major Republican theme going back over decades, and it's one the president much wants to pursue in his second term.
NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving with commentary on the president's inaugural address today. Ron, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Alex.